Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Pack Podcast. You're
listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay. Or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Hello, everybody. I cannot hear the show, but apparently you can hear me. So that is good. And me not hearing the show is bad. So good to be in. Good to hopefully talk some draft. Jacob, this is going to be fun. I don't know how we're going to pull this off, but we may have to reconnect at some point, I guess. But nonetheless, happy Sunday. Ready to talk some combine.
Been unmuted. Can you hear me?
There we go. All right. We are whole, finally.
Wow. The last 2 weeks have been really rough, so I apologize for the start there. Welcome to Pulse of the Pack. I mentioned, I don't know if you guys heard my monologue to start. If not, I know Jason couldn't hear me. We've had some technical issues each of the last 2 weeks now, something we hope to get rid of. But I'm your host. I'm Jacob Westendorf here on Combine Sunday. Defensive linemen, pass rushers, and linebackers are going today. Defensive backs are going tomorrow. We had the other guys throughout the week here starting on Thursday. But I'm your host, and Jason, Combine weekend, you mentioned not really your cup of tea typically, but you mentioned pre-show the draft bug has bit you. So exciting to get discussing the draft here. So my question now is, did you watch the Combine today?
I haven't watched any of it live. I've just watched some of the recap videos and such, as I've had a very busy weekend. So I'm in the Phoenix locale, so spring training is going on out here, and that's what kind of takes over in March. For those of us that live here, I've got my son, and we went to a Diamondbacks game against the Dodgers yesterday and watched what I like to refer to, and you've never heard me say this before, so this will be fun for you to hear for the first time. One of your twin brothers, Jock Peterson, who plays for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he actually had a pretty good game. Interesting, a friend of mine is a pitcher for the Diamondbacks. He got in the game yesterday, so that was cool. I got to watch him pitch to Jock and also to Justin Turner. But on back to Packers football, yeah, I'm excited for this draft just because of the fact that the Packers have two first-round picks. That leads a lot to lends a lot into it. But what I'm hearing about the prospects and the way that some of these results are coming in, we have to caution ourselves because they're not necessarily an indicator that these guys are going to be stud football players. But this has been one of the more fun combines that I can remember. And, yeah, I don't do a ton of draft research and prep. I'm not really a big draft guy. We've got a lot of other people that are fantastic at that, including yourself. And I would like to take a moment to shamelessly plug the Cheesehead TV draft guide, which is coming out soon. I think pre-order is going to be up soon. Jake, I'll let you take over all the dates on that. But the work that goes into that, I know that our listeners are probably the choir that I'm preaching to that are already subscribers. It is nothing short of phenomenal. And the cast of people that work on this whole guide are amazing. And Jake, let me just turn it over to you because you know more than I do, and maybe let everybody know too when they can start their pre-ordering and all that good stuff.
You can pre-order now. You can do that. It came up the other night. It's available for pre-order right now. Several guys here. If you pre-order now, you're looking at about $7 after a certain date, which isn't determined yet. It'll be $10. It's digital, so it's not going to be a hard copy. You're welcome to print it, do whatever you want with it. But a lot of great guys going through this. Ross Uglum's doing Edge. I'm doing tight ends. I just called myself great. That's really arrogant, but whatever. Andy Herman's doing quarterbacks, and I believe wide receivers also. Tyler Grzegorik's doing defensive line. Jersey Al is doing the offensive tackles, as he's done in recent years. A lot of really good minds breaking down and giving their opinion, their unsolicited opinion, because something in this draft season, and Jason, I've talked to you about this before, and I'm perfectly okay with people who do this, but I do tend to value the opinion of people more so that have their own opinion on a given prospect or a given position group, these people that have done their own homework, and they don't just basically take Matt Miller and a little bit of Mel Kiper and sprinkle in Todd McShay and then a little bit of John Ledyard and a bunch of these draft nicks and just basically combine their opinion based on those guys when they haven't watched 1 second of even a highlight tape to support their opinion. They're just saying, oh, you know, like one of my favorites is, like, for example, today, and we'll talk about it a little bit, Devin White is a very popular name for top inside linebacker in this draft, and I like Devin Bush a little bit better. Some of that I'm sure you guys will chalk up to Michigan homerism, and that's okay. But my favorite response is, LOL, you know, how could you think Bush is better than White? You know, Matt Miller says Devin White's a top five player in the class. That's great. Matt Miller does a lot of great work. I read a scouting notebook every week. That being said, I don't care. Well, I shouldn't say I don't care, but in essence, I don't care what his opinion is because this is my own opinion that I've come up with. And with Devin Bush specifically, I know my opinion on him is informed because I've watched every game he's played for the last 3 years, including tape now, slowing everything down. And I think Bush is the best inside linebacker in this draft. But there's a lot of guys that are doing that. I am not the only one. I'm far from the only one that is in this draft guide. There's a lot of great people doing it. So, yes, please pre-order it. I've tweeted it. Several people have tweeted it. If you're friends with me on Facebook, you can find it there as well. Click a pre-order button. It really does support the website and some of the work that a lot of these great people are doing. But, Jason, we're not here just to talk about the draft guide. The Combine weekend is actually the unofficial start, if you will, of the illegal, legal tampering period. And there's some information that's come out this week. The first big bit of news came from Rob Domofsky about outside linebacker Nick Perry, and it was Nick Perry. It said a source close to him stated he wouldn't be surprised if Green Bay doesn't pay his roster bonus that is due here in the middle of March, which, thank God, it's finally March. It's almost baseball season. Jason, you mentioned some spring training stuff. I'm watching the New York Yankees hit a crap ton of home runs here in spring training, so I'm very excited for what this season has to hold. A little disappointed they weren't willing to spend on Bryce Harper for whatever their reasons were, but that's not what we're here to discuss, obviously. But Nick Perry, it's been a popular suggestion to cut him. Him and Jimmy Graham are the two guys. Brian Bulaga, to some degree, that one doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But Nick Perry will free up some cap space, and I'm far from a salary cap expert. I'll have to ask somebody else how much exactly that'll give the Packers. But it's kind of a two-edged sword here, Jason. Clay Matthews has a contract expiring. Tyler Fackrell is on the roster. Reggie Gilbert, who hasn't really proven much of anything over the last 2 years, is on the roster. And Kendall Donerson's on the roster, who's proven absolutely nothing as a seventh-round pick. So I understand wanting to get rid of Nick Perry. He's been injured. He was ineffective when he did play last year. But at the same time, it really is hard to get rid of somebody when Perry, if he plays and is healthy, and that's a huge thing, he can give you something. Now, is it going to be worth the $12 million a season that he makes? No. That contract is set in stone. That's not going to be helpful. But at the same time, without a plan in place to replace him, I mean, you can't rely on the fact that you think an edge rusher is going to be available at 12th overall. or that you're going to sign a couple free agents, because free agents are just that. They're free. They're free to sign with whoever they want. And there's teams, the Packers have a healthy amount of salary cap space. But for example, a team like the New York Jets has $100 million almost in cap space. They can get whoever the hell they want, and they'll have to overpay for them. And the Packers just can't get into a bidding war quite like that for some of these guys. So I start this by saying I would release Nick Perry, but I also do that understanding that I know that means there has to be a plan in place to get better. Jason, is it a slam dunk? Is it a given to you that Nick Perry needs to play elsewhere here in 2019?
He's an intriguing discussion. I just pulled up his numbers. So he counts his contract, his cap hit this year is 14.4 if he plays. Cut him, it's 11.1 out of the pocket of the Packers, and they're only going to save about $3 million if they do cut him. He's got a roster bonus that's due soon that's worth $5.1 million. The Packers have some decisions to make here, and it's tough because they have to make the decision before the draft happens, which obviously is when you know more about what your future is going to look like. So when Nick Perry's healthy, which is a very low percentage of the time, if you ask me, it's too low, he can be effective. He's been good. He's only 29 years old. He's not even 30 yet, but he was so absent last year. And the problem is when he is hurt, his play drops off so much that you almost have to maybe consider cutting your losses here if the Packers are going to do well. I was going to joke. You mentioned if the Packers don't get their pass rusher at 12 and they strike out in free agency, and I was like, well, that's okay if they get their guy at 30 because he slipped all the way down to 30, then you might still hit on your pass rusher. But I don't know. I don't necessarily want Perry run out of town. There was some discussion and some conversation that Russ Ball met with David Dunn, who's the agent for Clay Matthews. Clay Matthews coming back is not as a full-time starting pass rusher or even a full-time inside linebacker. And if they're doing that, they being the Packers, they're not doing it right. I mean, they've got a lot of questions to answer. So it's unfortunately it was a contract the Packers had to gamble on that they decided to put together. It did not work out. They have not gotten their value for Nick Perry at all, and they have to deal with it. I don't know, Jake, what's your take? I mean, at the end of the day, the money does make a difference. I mean, 11.1 to cut your losses on Nick Perry before the draft, I don't think that's fiscally maybe the best decision to make. So, you know, I doubt he'll restructure his deal. The shelf life of an NFL player is short, and they're not going to give up any more money than they already don't get because baseball and football contracts are completely different. But, I mean, what's your take? Just from a money standpoint, like, what would you do?
Well, again, not to keep bringing up Andy Herman, but he wrote a story a few weeks ago, and it was basically there's a lot of options, and none of them are necessarily good ones. So that's where we're kind of at in terms of the Nick Perry situation. I tend to agree with what Andy's take was, which is just take your medicine now. You're going to pay him a little bit of money regardless. You might as well do it now and let him go before, you know, having to pay him more money for another ineffective season. And it at least forces you to get better at the position. Kind of what they did last year at cornerback. Kind of what they did also to some degree last year at wide receiver when they cut Jordy Nelson. They were trying to force themselves to get better at the position. Now, whether or not they did, you can certainly argue with me. I would say there's no argument they got better at corner. Wide receiver, that remains to be seen, I think. But I think Perry's that guy who his time's just up. And I think, you know, you don't want to pay him a check now and then later pay him to go away, if that makes sense. You don't want to give him a roster bonus here in a couple weeks and then a few weeks later just say that was $5 million we didn't have to pay. So I doubt they're going to do that. I tend to think if they cut him, it'll be here before free agency starts. And I would imagine they're going to be active in the free agent market for the pass rushers that are out there. And we'll talk about some of those here in a little bit. You mentioned another bit of news coming out and about, and that was Mike Silver talked about it a little bit last week. Randall Cobb's expected to walk. That's not surprising. He also said that the Packers may want Clay Matthews back and that they'll let him test the market first before giving him a contract and seeing maybe he'll do one of those things where he says, hey, here's my best offer. Do you want to match that kind of thing? The Packers were seen talking to Clay Matthews' agent this weekend. He also represents a few other players. So with that illegal legal tampering thing, that may very well be something they were doing as well. But Russ Ball was talking with him. And I would assume Tom Silverstein said it was a very good bet that he was talking about Clay Matthews. You know, my thing with Clay is what's the right price on that? I don't want the Packers to miss out on to use the Gar Foreman, John Paxson phrasing, perhaps at my own peril. Those guys are the GM and president of basketball operations for the Chicago Bulls. Younger and more athletic is a phrase they kept using when they hired Fred Hoiberg, and then they never got younger or more athletic with the Bulls. So I don't want to say that, but I don't want Clay Matthews to be the reason they don't get someone younger and more athletic, someone like Preston Smith, Shaq Barrett, Dante Fowler, Za'Darius Smith. There's a lot of guys out there. Maybe not. Are the Packers going to be in on Trey Flowers? There's reports that, you know, he's going to be looking at $14 to $17 million on his next contract. He is a young guy. He was good for the Patriots. I have that general rule of thumb that if he's a former Patriot, I'll pass on him. If I'm wrong, so be it. But I still think that I'm feeling that way as of right now. So with Clay Matthews, the question really is just a matter of price. And for me, I mean, if it's above $5 million bucks, and $5 million might even be on the too high, quote-unquote, side of things that we're looking at here. So I mentioned it. I've said it several times during the season. I told you guys in the preseason show it was something I was going to struggle with. Clay Matthews is one of my favorite players in the history of the franchise. I have his jersey hanging on my wall right over here in my basement. I've loved him since they drafted him. He's one of my favorite players. He's a pro's pro. I've gotten to meet him a couple times. He was really cool in those processes as well, even though a few of those stories might have involved me saying a few things that would have embarrassed myself. So I'm appreciative of that. I'm appreciative of he's played hurt. He's done a lot of things. He was the best player, in my opinion, on a defense that won the Super Bowl. So that's a lot of things. It's going to be hard for me to be objective on Clay Matthews. So that's as objective as I can get. If it's $5 million bucks, and he's going to come back as a backup, I'm cool with that. So if he's your secondary rusher along with Kyler Fackrell, and you have whether it's a free agent and a first-round pick or a first-round pick and a second-round pick, and I'll get to that in a little bit too, I'm cool with that. I just don't want Matthews to be the guy who you're coming into camp saying, hey, this is our guy, because I don't think Clay Matthews can be your guy anymore. So, Jason, what are your thoughts on Clay? Should the Packers bring him back? And if so, is there a price point that you want to draw that line in the sand, so to speak?
Yeah, Clay can come back, but it's all about the money for me, and five is too high. And that's what he's probably going to want. That's probably what he's going to get somewhere else. So I don't think Clay's going to be back. He's got to make the best decision for his family and all the usual jargon and cliches that we throw out there about these players. But, you know, I love what he did for the Packers. He's a football player through and through. And that's the thing about him, is that he's that guy. And that's what I talk about wanting more of on the Packers, which is a player who you can put on the field, who's never looked at any single, you know, page of the playbook, and can just go out there and make plays. And that's what Clay could do at one point in his career. And I think in his mind, he still wants to be that guy. His body may not be agreeing right now. But, I mean, if we're talking $3 million and under, I can be had on having Clay Matthews. I mean, you could do a lot worse for depth at linebacker. And he also knows how to play in the middle and on the outside. So you've got, you know, a little bit of both there. And if Kyler Fackrell is anything close to what he was this past season as a rotational guy, the Packers are building a nice little base at the position, and then they can really boost it if they can get one of these studs that tested really well at the combine. So, you know, I mean, at some point you got to move on. You know, Clay was drafted 10 years ago. This is his 11th season, and these guys just aren't meant to play for a ton of years. And when you're crashing into left tackles all the time and playing what Clay did, I mean, early in his career, he had some struggles. He had a great 2010, and then in 2011, you know, he dipped down. He didn't have as many sacks. So it's about the production for the dollar. And as I kind of age here and watch the game from a different perspective and understand the financials of it all, that's something that obviously has to be taken into consideration. As much as we love the player, Packers fans tend to be very nostalgic. They have a hard time letting go of some of these heroes that have been there for us over through the years, but it may be time to move on. And, you know, at this point, it's early to speculate because of what we're going to see happen over the next couple of months. I mean, this has been one of the more fun – one of the reasons I've been into the combine is because of the linebackers and defensive ends and defensive linemen who have put up these crazy numbers. And that's what the Packers hopefully are looking at very closely in this draft, even though they want to spend money on pass rushers. They're going to have a lot of options to replace Clay.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, like the other theory, the other thing that you can to the bank is players get paid for name value also. And Clay Matthews, his name is Clay Matthews, and that means something in some NFL circles. You're talking about a Hall of Very Good player, a surefire Packers Hall of Famer, and the franchise's all-time leader in sacks. Veteran presence, all that other stuff some team will talk about if they sign him, if it's not Green Bay necessarily. And like you said, he might get paid more somewhere else, and if they do, God bless him. I hope he makes his money and enjoys his time elsewhere. I'll be sad and thank him for the memories at another spot. But that's the other bit of news. And then something interesting, especially in this in this modern world, and it makes me laugh that I'm actually talking about this, because there was an Instagram post, and now you see why I was laughing. That's absolutely ridiculous that I'm using an Instagram post, but that is the world that we live in now. It was HaHa Clinton Dix posted a picture of himself in a number 21. Well, he only posted like the bottom half of his jersey. So it was like from the neck down of him intercepting a pass. And he basically said, like, take opportunities in front of you or something to that effect. And Landon Collins responded with his Instagram post saying, I thought that was me for a second. And then Clinton Dix said, it could be in a couple weeks, something along the lines of, you're going to love that green and gold, brother. And I don't know. This might mean nothing. This might mean something. Some people obviously have taken it and run with it. And it helps with shows like this because it's something to talk about. And I have really enjoyed it. I enjoy the speculation because I love basketball. I like watching the NBA. I like college hoops. I like baseball, obviously. I'll watch that all the time once that starts up here in the next 3 weeks. But at the end of the day, football's what we love. That's why we're doing a sport or, you know, a Packers podcast here on March 3rd when there hasn't been a game played for Green Bay in almost 2 months. So, hell, almost 3 months, actually, by the point we're getting here now. That's why we're doing that. So I've enjoyed taking it and running with it for a little bit. So some people have taken it to mean Landon Collins wants to come to Green Bay. Some people have taken it to mean that they want to come back to Green Bay together. So let's start there because that would be, of the scenarios we've laid out here, maybe the most interesting just because Clinton Dix was traded in October. There were some people that thought maybe he was not happy in Green Bay. He said something along the lines of, you know, I don't think I'm going to be here next year. And then he was traded a couple days later, and he was very active on Twitter talking about how we got some surprises in store for you. And then he was in Washington a week later, just like that. Collins and Clinton Dix obviously played together at Alabama. They're former teammates like that. I will say this, pure on the surface standpoint, a safety tandem of HaHa Clinton Dix and Landon Collins is better than anything they ran out there last year. At the same time, HaHa Clinton Dix, I don't think is very good. I think that was something where when they traded him, it wasn't that big of a deal because I don't think he's that good of a player. And he kind of showed that in Washington. And bringing him back, while it would make them a little bit better from where they were last year, how is it significant enough to the point where you're paying a guy, you know, $5-6 million or whatever he's going to make annually, and Landon Collins certainly maybe even double that, to the point where that makes you better. So let's start there, Jason. Is there any appeal to you whatsoever of Clinton Dix and Landon Collins coming to Green Bay together?
So, again, conditional. How is that happening? Are they the starting tandem? If they are, I don't love it because they're both kind of the same guy. The Packers need to finally, for once and for all, find a cover safety. Those guys don't grow on trees, but there are several guys in this draft that are supposed to be that. And you can get that later in the draft and find some value there and get a younger player who's faster, more athletic. HaHa Clinton Dix does not want to get his uniform dirty. He made some – okay, he had the interception against, I believe it was Buffalo last year, in the Buffalo game, if I'm not mistaken. Great. He made a play. It was nice. He did a thing. But he doesn't do it regularly enough, and he can't man center field. And this isn't even me being spoiled by having watched the likes of Nick Collins and Eugene Robinson for a couple of years. Leroy Butler was never really a center field type safety, Darren Sharper, you know, in his prime. The Packers have had some really good cover safeties, and you take that for granted when you have that on the back end. And then when you don't have it, it's obviously very glaring. So, like we talked about pre-show, if you're bringing Clinton Dix back, something he's going to be interested in, and you're playing him as a backup, and he's taking over where Tremont Williams left off, then, and Landon Collins is also coming in, okay, that's fine, maybe. But it also depends who's going to start at the other safety spot and what's the responsibility going to be. Kentrell Bryce is not an option. Josh Jones still has a lot of question marks surrounding him, but I'm not willing to give up on him. I think I would rather see what Jones can do. I mean, Collins is going to get snatched up. He's either going to get tagged by the Giants, and I don't know if they're still planning on doing that or not, or he's going to get snatched up. And so the Packers would have to make a decision pretty quick here. They're not going to get the luxury of waiting until after the draft, waiting until they see what spring ball looks like with Jones, and then saying, okay, Jones isn't ready, bring Collins in. They're not going to have that option. So I don't think it has to be a 1-2 punch. I think Collins is going to want to go play where he's going to be best paid. Obviously, money, number one, and then suited for the defense. Mike Pettine, to me, is a defensive coordinator that most guys should want to play for because he finds ways to get the best out of these guys and do more with them. He brings pressure from different places. So if you do like getting after the quarterback and doing something a little different, Green Bay might be a good destination. But, again, it's also going to depend on what kind of money we're talking about here because I have a piece going up, spoiler alert, tomorrow, Monday morning, at Cheesehead TV talking about the safety position, and I'm focusing specifically on Earl Thomas. Not necessarily that Earl Thomas is a realistic target for the Packers at this point right now, but just talking about how he makes maybe a little bit more sense than it sounds like, even though he made the comment last week that he wants to be the highest paid safety in the league, and don't they all? So, it again, short answer, depends on the situation, but, you know, Clinton Dix obviously traded away for a reason, so you'd have to assume the Packers were ready to move on there.
Yeah, so let's jump into Landon Collins a little bit because you did mention your story that's coming up tomorrow, and I kind of linked the two players pretty closely together. That is Landon Collins and Earl Thomas because those are going to be, at least in my opinion, the two highest paid safeties on the free agent market this year. And kind of the estimation on Landon Collins is he's going to get $12 million a year annually. Well, to make Earl Thomas the highest paid safety annually, we're talking about $14 million, $15 million. You know, my question on that then is if you're going to do that for Landon Collins, why would you not do that for Earl Thomas, who's a better player, albeit Collins is a little younger. They both have some injury concerns. Collins has been on injured reserve a couple times in his career. Excuse me. And Earl Thomas just finished his career or his career in Seattle on injured reserve with the infamous photo of him leaving the field in Arizona, flipping the bird to the Seahawks sideline, which is awesome for a lot of different reasons. But, you know, my comment on that would be is if you're going to spend on Landon Collins, why would you not just spend a couple extra million bucks on a better player? Because realistically, if we're talking $2-3 million, that's not likely to be the difference of you being able to get somebody else that's an impact player at another position. You know, there's not a lot there in terms of that. So Collins is all right with me, I guess, if they bring him in. I'm not in love with it. I think there's better ways to spend their money. Obviously, as it comes with anybody that they sign, I'll probably talk myself into it like I always seem to. But I would say, I mean, far and away my preference, if they're going to sign a safety, is Earl Thomas. So, Jason, your story's tomorrow. I don't want you to spoil it too terribly much. But where are you at in regards to that position specifically if they're going to spend some money on it?
You're going to spend the money on it. Get after Thomas. Plain and simple, make him the highest paid safety. That's fine. That dollar amount makes sense for who he is and the production that he's given his team in the past. Obviously, coming to a new team, you never know, and coming off two leg injuries, you never know, but it's Earl Thomas. He's that type of guy that I described earlier. He's a football player. You can put him out there in the Green Bay defense right now, not show him a single ounce of the playbook, and he'll still ball out, make plays, and be better than anything the Packers have put out there in years. So, open up the checkbook. Like I said, if you're going to pay Nick Perry, you were prepared to pay Nick Perry $14 million this season, and that's what it's going to take to get Earl Thomas, on your team, there's a slight, I'm sure we are in agreement here, Jacob. There's a slight, you know, difference between Earl Thomas III and Nick Perry. So open up the checkbook and make it happen. Now, some will say that while because they're paying Nick Perry, which, again, they might not be, depending on what the Packers do with Perry, but because they're paying Perry what they did and because they're going to take an $11 million cap hit to move on from him, if they want to try to save a few dollars, they can't sign someone like Earl Thomas. Well, that's just not true. And, Jake, I think I'll credit you here because you've tweeted several times over the past couple weeks, the salary cap is not a thing. There's a lot of ways that that can be manipulated, and there's just no reason why you don't go after a premier player when you have the opportunity. Thomas has to want to come to Green Bay. I don't know if that's what he wants to do. There's been a lot of speculation that he's a Dallas Cowboy until further notice. But he also was last week, one of the things that came out was that he's not giving any hometown discount to his hometown Dallas Cowboys. If they want him, they're going to have to pay for him. But the salary cap should not be the reason why Green Bay doesn't go after a player like him. And I wasn't really hot on Thomas coming to Green Bay because of the injury concerns. But the more we go through this process, the more we look at who's out there, what they need, how much of someone like Thomas would really help this defense on the back end and make them potentially elite again in the secondary. And again, I'm projecting because if you bring in Thomas, you don't know what's next to him. You've got Jair at corner, and then there's other question marks. Kevin King's health, his ability to improve. Does Josh Jackson improve as a corner? Who else is there? But it would be a huge boon for the Packers to bring in a guy like that. I can't think of the last time. I mean, I guess you'd have to go back to a Eugene Robinson, but I mean, Earl Thomas is way better. Robinson was in his 30s. He had Leroy Butler next to him in the 90s, and he was one of several missing pieces that ended up getting that 96 team over and winning a Super Bowl. Earl Thomas makes the Packers secondary very legit and a top unit once again.
Absolutely. And that's, I mean, you know, something else, for starters, you know, the salary cap, it is a thing. I shouldn't have said it the way that I did, but there are ways to manipulate it is kind of my point with that. Obviously, you can't, like, I can't go out and sign Von Miller, Khalil Mack, Aaron Rodgers, Odell Beckham, and Rob Gronkowski, just for example's sake. I can't sign all those guys and still field a 53-man roster, but there are ways to do things to make certain dollar numbers work. For example, front load a contract, back load a contract, restructuring deals, all that sort of stuff. There's ways to do it. As for the rest of the stuff you're talking about, Earl Thomas, this is a guy who makes the entire secondary better. He's a free safety that the Packers have not had since you went all the way back to Eugene Robinson. Nick Collins is the, although they didn't sign him as a free agent, which I think was your point, but they haven't had a guy like Collins was here in Green Bay, and that changed the entire defense. Now, you can have your chess piece type safety, whether that is Josh Jones or they draft somebody or maybe they sign somebody else to go along with it. I don't know. And it makes your corners better because Earl Thomas is able to protect guys like Kevin King and Jair Alexander and Joshua Jackson over the top, and they can scheme things certain ways. The other thing I don't really want to hear when it comes to free agency is it's always funny to me because – excuse me. It's funny to me because we all want to sign these guys and sign them, and, you know, every team does this, and then fans of all the other 31 franchises go, oh, well, you overpaid for him. Well, no shit. That's what free agency is. Anybody who's a free agent, more often than not, gets overpaid. And if they don't get overpaid, then they're getting a one-year, quote-unquote, prove-it deal and going back to the contract. It's very rare that you find value in free agency when you're chasing guys that you hope to be impact players. Your value free agents, very rarely do they become your high-level impact players. For example, Tremont Williams last year was a value free agent. Even in the Packers' wildest dreams, they couldn't have seriously thought he was going to be one of the best corners in football, whereas they were hoping that Jimmy Graham was one of the best tight ends in football. That's just an example. That's how they have to do things. That's how free agency works. It's a big reason why Ted Thompson didn't really participate in it. And we're not going to argue the merit of that. But, oh, they overpaid for him. Or, no, I don't want him. He's going to get overpaid. Well, the guy that you want is probably going to get overpaid too. And unless you're just wanting, again, to sign guys to one-year deals that don't do a whole lot, guys like Mercedes Lewis is an example. That was a value free agent and a good signing, don't get me wrong, even though they completely misused him. A good signing, but you're not going to find value on an unrestricted free agency market. So that's something I don't really care much to hear. But if you could give me the list of free agents and let me pick from them, obviously I'm assuming guys like DeMarcus Lawrence would be my pick, but I'm pretty sure he's going to get franchise tagged by the Cowboys. That would be my pick, is Earl Thomas. So I can't picture a scenario where that doesn't end up well unless he gets injured. And I'm willing to make him the highest paid safety in football over the next three seasons. Now, if he wants a 5 or 6 year contract, there's a discussion that needs to be had, and Russ Ball's got to figure out a way to make that work for the team, but that's his job. That's his full-time gig. Jason, the combine has begun. Actually, it's almost concluded. Tomorrow's going to be defensive backs, and there's plenty of things to discuss, but I want to start, because this is hilarious to me, with the Arizona Cardinals, someone who you have a rather large disdain for reasons we all know by this point, but the Cardinals have the number one overall pick, and for a while everybody seemed to have thought, oh, it's a slam dunk. They're going to take Nick Bosa, the pass rusher from Ohio State, or Quinnen Williams, the defensive lineman from Alabama. And it sounds like that Kyler Murray, quarterback from Oklahoma, is going to be the selection. Now, this could be – if this is a smokescreen, it's one of the worst ones I've ever seen, because everybody from around the combine is basically saying, oh, it's a done deal. Kyler Murray is going number one to Arizona. So let's just recap here real quick. Josh Rosen, to me last year, the only quarterbacks I had ranked above him were Baker Mayfield, and he was actually tied with Sam Darnold for me. So I had him as, at worst, the third-best quarterback, probably the second-best quarterback. I think I preferred him to Darnold very slightly. There were some rumors and stuff that came out about his attitude and all that sort of stuff, and I thought it was a bunch of malarkey, but that's beside the point. The Cardinals traded up to get Josh Rosen, okay? So they traded up for him just a year ago and then surround him with essentially nothing, maybe the worst offensive line in all of football, completely misused David Johnson. Larry Fitzgerald is old and decrepit and not the greatest person either. That kind of gets lost in the shuffle for some reason, but they misused David Johnson. There aren't a whole lot of weapons on that roster. And then they throw him into the fire in a two-minute drill against the Chicago Bears, who had the best defense in football last year. So their idea to set this guy up to succeed was to put him on the field against the best defense, trailing, needing a score. Like, hey, kid, your first drive better be a touchdown or a field goal, or we're going to lose this game. So horrible from that standpoint. And now they're talking about a year later of wanting to trade him so they can draft Kyler Murray instead of pairing Josh Rosen, building around him with some of the guys I just mentioned. So very simply put here, here's the question you have to ask. If you're like, you know what, that's not such a bad idea. Okay, let's talk about it this way. Would you rather have Josh Rosen and your pick of whatever prospect you want in this year's draft, so again, probably Bosa or Quinnen Williams, Kyler Murray, and then other teams basically get to decide for you what prospects are on your board, and that really does depend on who is willing to trade and what for Josh Rosen. Because if it's known that you're taking Kyler Murray, those teams have got you by the area in your pants. You're in trouble because that's trade negotiations are all about leverage, 100% about leverage almost. And now, why would a team trade a first-round pick for somebody that they know you can't keep? You're not keeping Josh Rosen on that team if you just traded for Kyler Murray. The Arizona Cardinals are the poster child of my saying of bad teams and bad organizations stay bad, and this crap is why. It doesn't even – Kyler Murray better be Aaron Rodgers in his prime and win you three Super Bowls. That is the only way that – and even then, the process is absolutely piss poor. So, again – I know things aren't the greatest in Packerland right now. They're not a contending team, and they haven't been for the last two seasons. But I lay down in my bed every night and thank God that I am a Packers fan and I am not a fan of a team like the Cardinals or the Bengals, and the Cardinals might be at the very top of that list because this is horrendous. Jason, this is funnier to you. So how bad is this, and how much do you love it?
Not bad. It's very good. And why do you think I hate the Cardinals so much? Because they suck, because they're terribly mismanaged, and they ruin our lives every time we face them in the playoffs, whether it's legit or not. Cough, cough, 2010, wild card game. So they're picking Kyler Murray number one overall, I'll tell you right now. I don't have any sources on the ground, but the Cardinals are going to do what the Cardinals do, which is dumb shit. 2 weeks in a row, Jake. I did it. Cardinals just do really dumb things, and that's going to happen. So they're going to bumble their way through trying to trade Josh Rosen, not getting enough for him. You know, the one thing about the Cardinals and the Bidwells are, as far as I understand it, the only or one of the only NFL owners who do not have another business interest that they are a part of. Everybody else who owns a team does something else, or they have another business that they work with or they operate with. You can look this up. The Bidwells don't. The Cardinals are their business, and their business has been bad for way too many decades, or good in my case, if you're not a fan of the Cardinals. I've lived in Phoenix for too long, and I've watched them play on my alma mater's turf as their home stadium and completely disgrace the stadium when 75% of it is filled with the opposing fans. Myself among them when the Packers came to play there. So I don't care. I hope the Cardinals screw it as bad as possible. And them screwing it as badly as possible and drafting Kyler Murray number one overall only helps Green Bay at 12 because you want as many quarterbacks to be drafted before 12 as possible. And this, unfortunately, is not the draft where there's a ton of quarterbacks to be found. So I'm good with all of it. I don't care how they screw it up. I don't care how badly it works out. I like Josh Rosen last year. Coming out, he was actually my favorite of all the quarterbacks. Whether or not that's true or ends up being the case still remains to be seen, but it's only going to benefit Green Bay because that's going to leave one less team that's going to grab a skill position or a position player that Green Bay might be interested in, and who knows who that is. You know, after this weekend, Noah Fant ran really well, put up great numbers at tight end. Defensive lineman Vontaze Sweat had a fantastic I think he ran the fastest 40 time for a defensive lineman in the history of the combine, and that's just one measurable. You got a lot of guys that are intriguing for Green Bay. I'm stopping at those two before I get too far off track. Those aren't my two favorites, but you know, just saying, it's only going to benefit Green Bay, and these next 6 weeks are going to be a lot of fun between now and when the draft actually happens, because guys who are coming out of here who just boosted their stock and moved into the first round. Then have to stay out of trouble. We know there's going to be one off-the-field incident or a problem. There's going to be a report that comes out about some sort of allegation or criminal charges against this or that player. You know, somebody's going to come out of the woodwork and try to extort a player. It's just, unfortunately, the world that we live in. There's so many things that are going to happen between now and then. But we can count on the Cardinals leading off the draft with the most idiotic move possible. And my bold prediction, I'll go on the record because I'm not a big draft guy, so it's not going to hurt me too much to say this. I think that the Cardinals will draft Kyler Murray. I also think that within the next 5 years, Kyler Murray is going to be playing Major League Baseball.
Drew Hensonism. Yeah, just like Drew Henson, for those of you guys that don't remember him, he was a big prospect for the New York Yankees, ended up coming to play the Dallas Cowboys. It was actually the other way around, I guess, in that. And I do think there's way too much smoke to this for me to not believe. I firmly believe Kyler Murray is going to be a Arizona Cardinal when it is all said and done. And I think that's a positive development for the Packers. The Packers are sitting at 12 right now, obviously. And I've heard about 25 guys who are never going to be there when Green Bay is on the clock to select, which goes against math. But, hey, more power to you guys. But what that does is it makes Nick Bosa fall at least one slot. It makes the other guys then keep falling a little bit. Murray was probably going in the top 11 anyways, but we don't know that for sure. And now I feel pretty confident that he is. And I just don't understand it. I don't know how you can sit back and say, hey, I would rather have, like I mentioned the scenario earlier, Kyler Murray and whatever prospect is now available at the highest pick that they could probably get is the 6th overall pick from the Giants if the Giants wanted to trade for Josh Rosen. But, again, why would the Giants offer the 6th overall pick when maybe a team's not willing to do that? My biggest fear in this scenario is that Josh Rosen ends up with the New England Patriots and they just keep on rolling once Tommy Brady decides to hang him up because it seems like the perfect kind of quarterback for Bill Belichick. There were rumors last year that the Patriots loved him. And I think, again, like I mentioned, I think Josh Rosen is very good. So I would build around him, but it appears that is not for right now, and that is what it is. It's hilarious, if nothing else, and it'll be plenty of fodder for this show for the next at least, well, like you mentioned, 3 or 4 years. So let's talk combine a little bit. The first one, obviously the favorite. I always mentioned I thought it was dangerous the way that my Twitter feed was kind of working through this, and it was almost like there was a consensus of, hey, we want Jakai Polite at 12, and we want Dalton Risner, or 30 wasn't quite a consensus, but Dalton Risner, TJ Hockenson, one of the tight ends at 30. Okay, cool. I like those players. But I want to talk about Jakai Polite because he had maybe arguably, of the pass rushers at least, probably the worst combine that you can mention of those top six guys that I've mentioned before. Again, just to go through that real quick, Nick Bosa, Brian Burns, Josh Allen, Cleveland Farrell, Montez Sweat, and now Jakai Polite. Of those six guys, Polite came in, according to some, it seemed like he was a little overweight. Maybe he added some bad weight for some weigh-ins, whatever it was. Didn't run particularly fast. Now, there has been a report that's come out that he had a hamstring injury. I'm going to have to take him at his word for that, but hamstring injury also seems to be code these days for ran a bad 40. And I'm not saying that's what he did, but it has happened before. In addition, his interview process was not the greatest. Now, Ross Uglum was at the combine and said this is overrated. So I'm going to take Ross again at his word for it, but I'm just giving you guys the information. Make for it what you will. Polite continued to talk about how teams basically just bashed him the whole time, and he didn't understand that. And then he said he's never watched film of himself. Again, I don't personally think that's that big of a deal. But when you add in, there's some of the smoke, obviously, coming out and about that that Polite does not necessarily love football. There's football character concerns. He's never gotten in trouble. His teammates seem to talk well about him. He's never been in trouble for, you know, drugs or violence or anything like that. So I don't know if you want to call this a character concern, so to speak, but football character concern of, you know, does it really matter if the player doesn't love football? And something pointed out to me by my friend, Matt Bowe, formerly of PackersTalk.com, is that the last time the Packers picked the I don't love football guy, it certainly mattered. And those of you guys that remember, that was Eddie Lacy. Eddie Lacy had the same comments. He didn't love football. He loved some of the things that football allowed him to do. And Eddie Lacy had two good seasons, flamed out, got criticized for his weight, had an okay fourth season in Green Bay, and then ended up in Seattle and is now, I believe, currently out of the league. And he's not playing at the Alliance or anything like that. So I assume he is done with football for his career. More power to him. He doesn't love football. That's great. But from the Packers standpoint, it's something I really struggle with. Obviously, I really like Jakai Polite. I've talked about him before. He wasn't my favorite of the guys. I've assumed Nick Bosa wasn't going to be available for Green Bay. I had Polite on the same tier with Brian Burns and Josh Allen. And now I think there's at least some concern to the point where, I mean, you've got to take some notice of what Montez Sweat did. And I'm not just talking about his 40 time, his three cone, his agility drill showed his ability. He actually ran a faster three cone than Brian Burns, which Burns gets a lot of credit for being a bendy athlete. He certainly is. That's why I really like him out of Florida State. Sweat, that doesn't show up on film, which is one of my questions as to why not. But with those numbers, that tells me that it can. And right now, I am at least willing to, I'm not going to go too far here and say that for sure, but I'm at least willing to say that I would rather have Montez Sweat than Jakai Polite at this point, who had been a consensus for sure. Going into this morning, almost all of Packers Twitter has basically said, okay, Jakai Polite to Green Bay. And Tony Pauline reported that the Packers, quote, really like Jakai Polite. Now, what does that mean now? Does that mean they like him at 12 overall? That's something where, again, it's tough. This is the hardest part as an evaluator from outside of an organization. Well, does this guy want to commit himself to being a professional? They're questions you really can't answer unless you're inside the org, getting to know the guy and taking a 40-second clip and basically saying, okay, this guy doesn't love football, write him off. I struggle with that. I can't do that. Now, there's enough smoke to where that some of those answers he gave definitely give me some pause, and I'm worried a little bit to the point where I don't know if I'm in love with the selection at 12 overall. He has a lot of questions to answer, and like you mentioned, Jason, there's a month and a half between now and the draft. To me, he has a lot of questions to answer at his pro day, and everything else that he's doing between now and when April kicks off and the Packers are on the clock at 12 or at 30. So let's get into that, Jason, because you've mentioned, you know, the other day you just said something along the lines of it was a horrible dad joke, which I laughed at because I'm trying to get in on dad jokes. But you were just saying you were just trying to be polite in regards to a criticism's not the right word, but a critique of Brian Burns, so to speak. So how concerned are you with polite showing at the combine, both in the interview process and in the on-field work?
I'm not there yet in terms of concern. I'd be concerned about his attitude towards football. I don't want, if he doesn't love football, I don't want polite in the first round. That's as simple as that. And I've been a polite guy since the beginning. Burns has moved up my board, and it's, yes, call me a victim of the combine, that's fine. But I've also, I have actually, it's funny, I don't watch a lot of tape on these guys or film, but Brian Burns is, I've probably watched more on him than anybody else, and I've been trying to talk myself out of Brian Burns since the very beginning. So I like what I hear in interviews. His numbers look good. If he loves football, I think Burns might be the guy over polite. Polite had a hamstring injury. He aggravated it running his 40-yard dash. This was Bill Huber reporting just a few minutes ago, and he basically, Polite was advised to shut it down and not work out at the combine because of it. He has got, now has a hamstring issue, and I even saw Zach Cruz tweeting out earlier today that Polite will now be there at 30 because that's what the NFL teams do. They panic, they freak out, then guys drop way down the board, and all of a sudden he's the Miles Jack of a few years ago, and he's sitting there available, and Packers fans lose their mind when the Packers don't select that guy. You have to trust Green Bay that they've done their due diligence. There was the story that came out earlier today about Polite feeling like the Packers, you know, bashed him in the interview process because they asked him some tough questions. You got to expect that coming into the draft, into the combine. And then when you listen to the audio, that was when you see it in writing, it looked bad. When you listen to the audio, Polite admitted and he acknowledged that that's what the NFL team's job is to do. The Niners did the same thing. You know, Polite said the Rams were the only team that didn't bash him. They were his best interview. Well, if you don't ask the tough questions, sometimes you don't uncover the most important details about a player, and then you pick a guy and he doesn't turn out for you like you hope that he would. You mentioned Eddie Lacy. That's a great example. You want guys that love the game, and it's hard to find that, you know, and some guys might love the game and they get into the NFL and their eyes are widened. And a year later, they're like, okay, I don't know if I love it as much as I used to. Look at Chris Borland as an extreme example of that. Chris Borland absolutely loved football. And he was a great, smart football player. And he shortened his career because he didn't want to put himself up against some of the risks and what he saw in his few years playing NFL football. So there is a lot of gamble that goes on with all this. There's going to be a lot that's going to come out over the next 6 weeks. So I'm not going to get too concerned over any prospect right now unless they get arrested for a, you know, first-degree felony or something that obviously is going to impact their availability or the type of player that you want to have on your team. So I'm not worried about Polite right now. If he's not the guy, that's fine. There's a lot of other guys. You mentioned Sweat. Great 40 time, record-setting 40 time, but he doesn't bend well, you said, and I'll trust your take on that because I haven't watched a lot of tape on these guys, and frankly, I don't know if I'd know what to look for if I were. I'm definitely not an Andy Herman or a Dustin Evely type or a Jake Westendorf for that matter, because I know you put a lot of tape work in yourself. So early, and I think the point we're trying to make is we're trying to stay on brand here and bring a laugh or two to the podcast because – this is what fans do, and media does it too. We overreact. Oh, my gosh, this guy, you know, okay, he's going to be there at 30, and now all of a sudden you're going to see mock drafts come out, and they're going to get all shaken up and completely sliced and diced, and that's just watching how things morph so much from right now to the end. And there's probably somebody who makes it a business of theirs or a job of theirs to kind of show how the mock drafts, like, you know how they show the time lapse of something being built? Like the time lapse of a mock draft going from what it is now to the actual draft itself and when players actually get taken. So not too concerned. Ja'Kai Polite, I think, will be a good football player. You know, my uncle is a Florida Gator alum. He watches a lot of Florida football, and I texted with him earlier today, and I just said, what is your take on Polite? Because, you know, I've heard his motor is good and – you know, he's a high prospect, and my uncle said, I would describe his motor as okay. All right, well, that's a guy that's watched a lot of Florida football very intently. And if you throw into the mix there that this guy might not love football, my opinion can very, very quickly change. Because if you're picking at 12, you better pick a guy that absolutely loves this game.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree with what you mentioned about, you know, loving football. And there's questions with everybody, because when somebody says, oh, you got to hit, you know, I got a friend of mine who talks about this all the time. He's a really smart guy, but he always says, you know, this guy's got to be a sure thing at this pick. Well, there's no such thing. Tony Mandarich was a sure thing, for example. There's a lot of guys that were mentioned as sure things. It's the draft. It's a crapshoot. Now, that doesn't make it less valuable, and that doesn't make it less fun for me to try and pick who are my guys that I would be willing to bet on. But that really is what you're doing. You're betting on guys, and you're hoping that they become what you are projecting them to be. And Polite has to answer some questions, but so do all the other guys. And I mentioned, you know, a lot of things that have got to be answered between now and when the draft starts. Polite is certainly not unique to that. Every one of them is. You know, going into the weekend, one example I can give is Brian Burns had to answer the question of how much does he weigh, because some people thought he was playing in like 225. Well, you're not setting the edge in the NFL at 225 pounds. He weighed in at 250, and he still looked very athletic, very smooth, very, very able to bend and, you know, set the edge like that on the athletic testing fields. It's the reality of the situation. There are no sure things. You can tell me all you want about how, you know, Quinton Williams is the best player in this draft, and I agree with you. However, there's still a possibility that he stinks, and there's a lot of reasons that that can happen. Sometimes it's injury. Sometimes it's just a complete misevaluation of a player. Sometimes he gets put in a really bad situation. There's a lot of those. So that's, you know, that's where we're kind of at. I don't want to dive in too much with Polite. I'm not going to tell you that I want to pick him in the fourth round now, whereas I would have picked him at 12 going into the day. But there are some questions that need to be answered, because his tape's really good. And, you know, like I mentioned, if you are picking at 12 overall, does he or does he not love football? I think that matters to some degree, because like I mentioned, the last time the Packers picked a guy who didn't love football, it was Eddie Lacy, and it absolutely mattered, because that was somebody who was unable to do maybe perhaps the, well, you would think the easiest part of his job, and that is stay in condition to be in your, you know, your all-time playing shape than an NFL athlete that you would expect is. Jason, let's talk a little bit. Obviously the combine, people could say, oh, you know, nobody can really help or hurt themselves. That's a bunch of bullshit. Since you swore earlier, I'll jump into. But that's not true. Players, quote-unquote, help themselves at the combine all the time. That is how John Ross got picked. He was not getting picked ninth overall before he broke the combine and ran a 4.240. There's plenty of examples of that. The Oakland Raiders picked Darius Heyward-Bey in the first round solely because of his 40 time. Maybe not solely, but he helped himself at the combine. So there's obviously players that have helped themselves. As we're recording the show, the defensive backs haven't worked out yet, but who are some guys that you have noticed that have helped themselves? And I will start. I'll start with Devin Bush, and there's going to be a theme that you'll see. And like I mentioned before, you know, there's some homerism that may come into play here that you guys will accuse me of, and that's fine. I can handle that. But Devin Bush, one of his concerns was, that was he going to be tall enough? He is 1 inch shorter than Devin White, who is a consensus top five pick. He ran a 4.440, and in my estimation, he is completely better on tape than what Devin White is. But Devin White, you are projecting, and I completely understand that. I have Devin White as a top 20 player in this class. But in my opinion, Devin Bush is better. He's got the instincts to play linebacker. He sees and he hits, and when he hits you, you're going to feel it tomorrow. Devin Bush is somebody who you can play in your base linebacker or as your base linebacker, because he's able to play in the run game. And he's also somebody who can cover guys out of the backfield, which is equally as important in today's NFL. Somebody, I think it was Zach Cruz, made the point earlier of if they drafted Devin Bush and they took a huge second year leap from Oren Burks, then the Packers would be able to do then is play their base defense almost exclusively and not give up anything in coverage. Very similar to what the San Francisco 49ers were able to do a few years ago when they had Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman. Now, I'm not saying that that's what that linebacker crew would be, because that's one of the best crews I've ever seen in my lifetime. But that's something, for example, I think he helped himself. He weighed in well. He measured in well as far as his height went. In my opinion, mark this down. I'll die on this hill. Devin Bush is a better prospect, in my opinion, than Devin White. The other guy, listen, I've been all over this since, September, is Chase Winovich, edge rusher from Michigan. He came into the year kind of known as the other guy, if you will, at Michigan because of the hype that surrounded Rayshon Gary. And I don't think Rayshon Gary is a bad player by any stretch of the imagination, but he had a lot of hype to live up to. He was the number one recruit in a class, came to Michigan. The production certainly doesn't match that. He's got a lot of tools. He's a freaky athlete. But there were some questions as to whether or not Winovich was athletic enough to play in the NFL. And he was 4'5", 940. He had a three cone under seven. He's able to bend the edge. He's a technician, in my opinion, with his hands. That shows up on tape. Chase Winovich is a top 50 prospect to me. If the Packers picked him at 44, I would be elated. If they picked him at 30, I wouldn't bat an eye. And you can write that down right now. I'm going to have Chase Winovich as the seventh best edge rusher in this class behind those six guys, and maybe has a chance to sneak in the top six or the top five, depending on some evaluations that take place between now and when that draft starts. But he's absolutely a top prospect. He showed that this weekend. He's somebody that you're going to love on your team. He's not just a high motor guy. He's got the motor. He's got the athleticism. He's able to play. I think Chase Winovich made himself a lot of money today. I say that, and it's perfect timing. I'm watching a rerun of the combine right now. He's on TV running through some of the athletic drills. So it's perfect timing. I think those two Michigan guys really helped themselves this weekend. They made themselves a lot of money. And then Montez Sweat is somebody else because, like I mentioned, I had questions about his ability to bend the edge. And when you run a three-cone time that's 7 seconds on the dot, the same time as Brian Burns, now my question is just why doesn't that show up on tape? But I certainly think that's somebody who now I won't be surprised at all if he's picked in the top 10. Hell, maybe even the top five at this point, just because somebody's going to bet on that size and that speed and athleticism. I'm not going to tell you he's not going to be available when Green Bay's on the clock, but I think he made himself quite a bit of money this weekend, and I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what happens with some of the rest of these guys throughout this process here. But those are my three guys. So Devin Bush, Chase Winovich, and Montez Sweat. Jason, did anybody stand out to you in what you've been able to find so far from this combine stretch?
Okay, so since we have some extra time, I'm going to go ahead and do this for you, Jake, because this is a perfect illustration of what I talk about every year with the combine. You got guys that get a lot of media play and then guys that don't. Okay, so here's Devin White versus Devin Bush on the measurable side. Devin White, 6 feet. Devin Bush, 5'11". Devin White, 237. Devin Bush, 234. Weights change all the time. Weight, wingspan, White, 75 7/8. Devin Bush, 76 1/2. Devin White's 40, 4.42. Devin Bush, 4.44. Devin White vertical, 39.5. Devin Bush vertical, 40.5. Broad jump. Devin White, 9 feet, 10 inches. Devin Bush, 10 feet, 4 inches. Give me Devin Bush every day, all day. Devin Bush should leapfrog Devin White. But will he? I don't know, because it depends on how much media play these guys get. But give me Devin Bush all day. I'm strictly looking at a picture of him, and I'm telling you from a body type standpoint, I have no idea if they're going to be similar type player, but I'm looking at Devin Bush right now, and I see Bobby Wagner's body type. I don't know if they're going to be the same type of player. If they are, the Packers better damn well be looking at Devin Bush, because, boy, he can play in the cold, and he looks mad in this picture, and I love that type of player in a Green Bay uniform. So just to throw a little bit of Michigan love at you, it had nothing to do with Michigan. It's just the numbers, and it just happened to be a perfect illustration of how we sometimes let the narratives take over our better judgment. You know, you mentioned Winovich. That would be interesting if they took him late. That would probably surprise a lot of people, but you have to trust that the Packers know what they're doing and that their board is set up the way that it is for a reason. So Noah Fant, to me, you already said Sweat. Sweat was going to be the number one guy just because he set a record. Noah Fant to me, and then DK Metcalf put together a pretty good combine, put together some pretty good measurables. It's interesting that he wasn't the top wideout on his own team in college. When you look at a body type like that and you think Terrell Owens, you know, he's just a genetic freak. He's just a, you know, he's a workout warrior. Who wouldn't want that strength and size on their team? You think of guys like Calvin Johnson. You think of guys like T.O. You think of guys like Dez Bryant who've got good size, know how to use it. You know, we'll see what Metcalf turns out to be, but he didn't hurt it. Definitely didn't hurt his case. And then you look at somebody like T.J. Hockenson, and Hawk only put up 17 bench reps. He's been, you know, whether he wanted to or not, he got compared to Rob Gronkowski because what do? We compare players because that's what we need to do to make them make sense in our minds. Gronk put up 23 reps at his combine back in the day. So there's, you know, is the strength the same? Is the football acumen there? I have no idea. Some people were talking about Hockenson going in the top 15. He's just that good. But Noah Fant put up way better numbers. So is Fant going to jump Hockenson in the draft now? I have no idea, but I'd love to find out. That's one position the Packers really need to be looking at, and they need to bring in a young tight end. They've got to stop going the free agent route. It's not working. And so hopefully one of those two guys is on their radar. I know they love Iowa or have historically when Ted Thompson was drawing or making the picks, but Brian Gutekunst was part of those personnel teams, and so does he love Iowa? I hope so. I really do. So these numbers and where they're picking and the picks that they have, they're all going to jump around, and it's going to become really, really interesting. And if Dalton Risner slips into the second round and they can get him in the second round, does he turn into the Josh Jackson of last year where, oh my God, we didn't think he was going to be available if we didn't pick him in one and they got him in two? You know, that's the fun of this whole thing. That's the fun of it all. We haven't talked about guys who hurt their case, and Elijah Holyfield got a ton of flack for his 40 time. But again, does he love football? Is he a good football player? Are there examples of other backs who have run a 40 in that time and gone on to have successful NFL careers? It's not necessarily all about speed. You know, we get so excited about some of these guys, the outside linebackers. I'm seeing fans like freaking out about Bosa's 40 time and, oh my gosh, that's terrible. No, it's not. Look at the comps. Look at the comparables of players who have run in a similar time frame. Understand what a reasonable 40 time is for that position group. You don't need the guy who shattered the record book. You need the guy who's going to be the football player, durable, and want to be out there. Bosa knows his 40 time sucked. You know, he's coming back from a core injury. That's probably part of the reason why. You have to look at all of the factors and put all the context behind why these guys are performing the way they're performing. And then let's also realize these guys aren't wearing pads. They're not chasing ball carriers down. They're not running away from would-be tacklers. This is the underwear Olympics, to use Marcus Ebersol's, you know, former Pulse of the Pack host, famous description of the combine, and I'm sure many others have done the same. We have to take this weekend with a grain of salt. It's one look into what these players are.
It is. And, you know, I've often said that's perfect because I was going to go into philosophy. It matters. I'm not going to pretend that the combine doesn't matter because something else, for example, I would say this is a job interview. And for me, like, you know, you're getting drug tested at the combine. If you are dumb enough to fail a drug test at the combine, you're off my board. Because how dumb do you have to be? They are telling you when the test is, and they are telling you what the answer to the test is. Off my board. It's very simple. And give a clean drug test. That's simple to me. But it does matter to a point of, you know, there are numbers that can support what the tape says. Now, to me, I've always said, I always go back to the tape. Ultimately, that's what's going to matter to me the most. So I mentioned Montez Sweat making some money. What am I going to have to do now? Because I didn't see a bendy athlete. I have to go back and look at that tape and see, did I miss something? Because, hell, I'm not perfect. GMs miss on guys, and those guys watch football for a living. Me, I do this as a hobby. So I'm not going to be able to answer all those questions. So now I have to go back and look. But it does matter because there are certain things that you see on tape and you're able to see, like maybe some of these smaller school types. Are they able, because, you know, you're asking about their competition. Are they going to be athletic enough, or are they just the most athletic on that field against a bunch of subpar athletes? Well, when you have somebody from a smaller school throw up a raw athletic score of a 9.5, just for example, that's Kentley Platt, Math Bombs target, and something the Packers really look for. Ross Uglum just posted a bunch of good stuff about that. But that's an example you can look at. It matters. Because if you show up, and another thing, if you show up unprepared, for example, these guys like Nick Bosa, for example, if he had showed up unprepared today, I don't know, I wouldn't have taken him off my draft board, but I would have had a lot of questions because this is a guy who left Ohio State in September and said, I was just going to prepare for the draft, prepare for the combine. If he shows up overweight, not a shape, what the hell were you doing for the last 6 months? Because, again, this is a job interview, and you don't show up to a job interview – unprepared. But at the same time, there's plenty of examples of guys who have killed the combine and turned out to be crappy players because they're not able to do anything once the pads come on. And there's a difference. There's plenty of guys who haven't done well at the combine. You know, they didn't have the measurables, if you will. Jerry Rice is an example of somebody they thought was slow, and he might be the fastest player in pads in NFL history. Maybe not anymore with some of the freak athletes that have come in. But Jerry Rice is the greatest wide receiver in the history of professional football. And he didn't get picked early because they thought he was too slow. So there's plenty of examples. You get to dig at these guys. It's your first chance to meet them, get to know who they are, stuff like that. Plenty of examples. I wanted to get into guys that hurt themselves too. You mentioned Elijah Holyfield. There are things in this, for example, that can run a time that I believe is disqualifying. Something that is maybe your tape is good, but if you're going to run that, then you're off my board or, you know, taking a serious tumble. Georgia had a horrible weekend. Elijah Holyfield is one. Riley Ridley did not work out very well. And the most disappointing one to me was Isaac Nauta. As I've mentioned several times, I'm doing the tight ends for this year's TZ TV draft guide. And the Nauta was in my top five in terms of guys just based on tape and what I thought was athletic upside. And then he ran a 5-second 40. And, I mean, just for comparison standpoint, obviously I can't compare myself to an NFL athlete, but these are just the numbers. Do with them what you will. When I was in high school, I ran a 5-1 40-yard dash, and I was a 230-pound offensive guard for a small school and really not that good at football. Isaac Nauta ran a 4.99, meaning he was 0.2 seconds faster than I was. Not a lot, not great, not a good look. Somebody who's definitely taken a tumble. Sky Polite, somebody who Matt Miller just tweeted, and I'll pull it up here real quick as I'm talking, trying to find it here again. But Matt Miller just tweeted about Sky Polite that he was speaking with somebody, and he said that he got home and he opened his phone and he had 5 texts from scouts about how bad Polite interviewed on top of bad workouts. So bad interviews, bad workouts. One said his injury was BS and his stock is taking a tumble. Again, there are people that have things to gain on that, but that's a red flag. Obviously, the more and more information that comes out, we're going to learn a lot more. Like I mentioned, Ja'Kai Polite lost himself a lot of money this weekend because this is a guy who, like I mentioned, Matt Miller saying his stock is taking a significant tumble. It could very well continue to tumble. Tim Williams was somebody who was thought of as a first round prospect, had some character concerns and a few other things, and eventually was picked in the third round. That would be considered a massive failure for Ja'Kai Polite, who some, like I mentioned, the consensus amongst Packers Twitter was 12 overall. Pick him. Done. Done deal. Can't do that now. Probably won't do that now, I should say. Granted, a lot of questions can be answered between now and then. This is all a fluid process and very subject to change. There's stuff that changes the night before the draft. Laramie Tunsil is an example from a couple years ago, was considered a top-end prospect at left tackle, and there was a picture that surfaced the day of, now I think this was Bush League, but a picture that surfaced the day of the draft of him wearing a gas mask and quite clearly lighting a joint. And I don't mean to make light of that if you guys are adamantly against it, but it was kind of funny, at least to me. And I think that there is something that can change. That was an example. He fell from maybe the first overall pick discussion all the way down to where he was drafted by the Miami Dolphins. And it was because of one picture. Now, stuff like that can change. Ja'Kai Polite's no exception. But very bad weekend for those guys. Like I mentioned, they lost themselves some money. Some defensive backs could certainly lose themselves some money tomorrow. But those are the names that come to mind for me immediately is those three kids from Georgia and Polite specifically. Jason, did I miss anybody? Is there somebody that you saw that maybe lost himself some money that I didn't mention?
No one that you didn't mention, but I will just say Ja'Kai Polite did not help himself out at all. And the more I'm seeing and the more that's coming out here, it's really giving me pause. I'm not off the train. It's just giving me pause. Sometimes these guys can have some issues. I mean, personalities are interesting. We don't know who these guys are, and we don't know what their personalities are. I've heard some really interesting tests that teams have given players. I mean, one team, I think, the Seahawks put a corner through a staring contest at one point during his interview, and they have a reason for doing some of these things, and maybe these players just aren't accustomed to being poked and prodded like this. They've been coddled. They've been, you know, preferred athletes for several years. They've been given full scholarships. They're treated like kings on campus, I'm sure, when they're in college. And now all of a sudden they're, like you said, it's the biggest job interview. And of course the amount of investment that these teams are making, especially these high picks in the first round, you have to understand if you're a top 15 or a top first round prospect, you're going to get put through the ringer. It doesn't matter who you are. I mean, Kyler Murray apparently might be the exception here because it's the Arizona Cardinals and they suck, but these teams, these players should know what they're going to, they're going to be up against. If they've got an agent, a representative, a team, hell, parents who have a head on their shoulder at all come into the combine being understanding and being prepared for what's to come. So, you know, Holyfield didn't run well. You know, I don't know how great he was supposedly one of the top backs in the draft, according to many, and now that's probably not the case. You know, on the flip side, some of these other guys have run well. And, you know, I said, like we talked about before the show, I want to know what's between the ears. That's one of the biggest things that we're not talking about out of the combine. We know what the physical results were, but what's between the ears? How smart are these guys? How well do they test? How well do they, you know, I'm not asking for Wonderlic scores. I don't want to break any HIPAA or any privacy. And I've been very much against Wonderlic shaming that happens in the past. I don't like that. It's probably going to happen again this year. We're going to hear about some guys who scored low. I'm not about that. I'm not for that. These guys are college athletes. You know, the intelligence levels are different for different reasons. You never know what kind of, you know, learning abilities or disabilities, whatever term you want to use is. It's all about who the person is and what kind of desire they have to play football in the end. You know, this combine, the way that the careers of these players shape up is not going to match with the combine results. And this year is no different than the last 50 years. Go back even further than that. Speaking of which, since we're running a little bit out of time here, Jake, I don't know if we're ready to roll off the draft talk yet, but there was a little bit of news that came out, and it's not official, but it does relate to the age of the NFL and a couple of teams that have been around since near the beginning, and some pretty cool news, actually, if you think about it. The NFL could be breaking with tradition this year, so I guess I'm segueing us out of the draft talk if we want to hit up on something and then work our way back if we need to.
That we do. It's a perfect segue, and it was that there's been some rumors. It hasn't been officially confirmed, but Mark Murphy in his Murphy Takes Five piece on Packers.com said that it was, quote, very likely that the Packers open week one of the season in Chicago against the Bears on Thursday night. So not going with the Super Bowl champion as they have done in years past. They are going with the two most historic franchises in the history of the NFL. I personally love it. I know that somebody, I'm sure people are going to bitch regardless, but I'm sure somebody's going to complain or make some point about how Roger Goodell didn't want the Patriots to open the season. And of course he did it because it's the Patriots and he doesn't like the Patriots and blah, 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 whatever. That's all beside the point. These are the two most historic franchises in the history of professional football. They essentially put the league together, or at least some of the inaugural teams that put the league together. I love it because it's an opportunity to remind, again, there's a lot of Bears fans who have talked a lot of smack, and deservedly so. The Bears won the division. They went to the playoffs, didn't win a playoff game. I would like to remind you of that as many times as I can. Parky Fayo, as Jason likes to point out very often, but didn't win a playoff game, but they did win the division. They beat Green Bay the last time they played them. And I think, me personally, it is a perfect time to remind them. As I have mentioned, I've had it in my head for several times, no matter what changes or what happened over the last little bit, don't ever forget who your daddy is. And the Packers are the Bears' daddy. I think it was Zach Jacobson, and I might be a little wrong on the numbers, but I think of the last 51 times the Bears and Packers have played the Bears, the Bears have won 13 of those games. That is it. And for those of you that are mathematicians, that means the Packers are 38-13 in the Bear in the Packers' last 51 games against Chicago. So I am excited if that is the first game of the season. It is also very possible that falls right around the time that my son or daughter is supposed to be born. So I'm hoping for a good disciplined young man or lady that allows daddy to watch that game before going into the delivery room. But I would love nothing more than to welcome my son or daughter into this world with a lesson. Let me tell you something, baby Westendorf. We always beat the Bears. That's what we do. And we've done it ever since I was a little boy. And now that you're a little boy or girl, that's what we're going to do. We're going to welcome you in by beating the Bears. So I am all for it. I have my calendar circled that Thursday night for the first game of the season instead of the New England Patriots on September the 12th, which, oh, geez, I didn't realize it was that close. That's the day before my son or daughter is due to be born. So I may very well be in a hospital room with a Packers jersey on under my hospital gown and attire of that sort while my son or daughter is born. So I'm excited for it. I think it's a perfect way to start the 100th season. Obviously, I may not feel that way if I wasn't a Packers fan, but I would think that I would. So big deal there. Jason, what's your level of excitement? How do you feel about, you know, opening up in Chicago this time around?
I love it. Of course I love it. I'm selfish. I mean, that means we get Packers football 3 days early to start the season, and then the Packers get like a mini bye right out of the gate. So that's phenomenal if that happens. I hope that it does, and it is funny. The Packers-Bears series has been a very entertaining one to watch because when I started watching Packers football as a kid, the Bears owned it. This was in the mid-80s. They owned it, and it was the Chicago show. And then finally, the reversal game happened in 89. It was so exciting because, A, we beat the Bears, and secondly, because I never seen the Packers beat the Bears when I cared about watching them play. You know, for many years, it was sweep, sweep, sweep. Then all of a sudden, the Packers win the first game at Lambeau, and they ended up winning in Chicago, too, and they swept the season series. And then from then on, then Favre comes into town, and it was all over from there. You know, the Bears have – and I don't know when the last time was that they swept. You know, it's been a really long time. If I go back and look at the entire series, and I'm just kind of going back in my head mentally right now.
It was 2007.
I mean, it's been – yeah.
The year the Packers
long
went
time.
13
you
and 3. They
lost
three games that whole year.
You know,
two of them
Packers
were against Chicago.
Well, the Packers beat themselves in that first game. So I think Brady Papinga had a stupid penalty in the first game, the Sunday nighter at Lambeau. And then late in the season, Brett Favre threw that game, literally. He had no interest in playing in the cold. It was bitter cold. He didn't want to be out there. And they got their butts kicked. And they'd only lost two games all season. And they looked like a team that didn't even belong on a football field that day. It was very odd. It was freezing cold. You know, terrible wind chill that day in that game late in the season. But this is – Patriots fans will disagree, and I hope they're listening to this show because it's you know, let's be honest, they've had a lot to celebrate over the past few years. So F you, Patriots fans. I don't care what your thoughts are on this whole thing. And if you're upset, good. I'm glad you're upset. Go cry some more because no one cares about your crap. No one cares about your BS. I definitely don't. You know, move on. I think the NFL is making a great decision here by breaking with tradition. If there's a special case and an opportunity, you know, I mean, it's the centennial of the league. Deal with it. Nobody wants to watch the Patriots go out and bore their way through a 28-17 win over some team. I mean, yeah, they've had some exciting games in the past, but the Super Bowl didn't do them any favors. So it's like, yeah, you won a championship, but your punishment for giving us the shittiest and most boring Super Bowl in years is you will not be playing on Thursday night. You can have Sunday night. You can have Monday night. You can have a Sunday noon game. For all I care, it doesn't matter. Just get lost. Get gone. We don't need you in a primetime slot for once and for all. So there you have it. Those are my thoughts on that. I just, you know, I have to laugh, Jake, because the Bears, I mean, come on. They lost to Brett Hundley at Soldier Field. I mean, Brett Hundley to Devontae Adams, who is not going to ever – we should replace the Cobb highlight with that, even though Hundley's not on the team anymore. We should probably swap the Cobb. We got to have a Bears highlight in there always. I think that should be the rule. In fact, by the way, I didn't have a chance to tell you, so I'll tell you along with the other 80,000 listeners that we have. I have put in a request through CD Angeli to get our Sting updated. We should have a new one, hopefully by the summertime. That'll have some new highlights and a new sound. And that's the biggest key is we're going to swap out some of the highlights because, unfortunately, as much as I love Randall, going to be back and he is featured in one of our two sound bites. So, which is against the Chicago Bears. Last week of the season, Aaron Rodgers returned, 2013, NFC North winner. Packers-Bears, it doesn't get any better to start the season. And I know we're running out of real estate here, so I'll turn it back over to you.
how can I end it any better than that? I can't, so I'm going to. That's going to do it for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show. It's at Packer Pulse on Twitter. You can follow me. I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason. He's at Jason Perrone. Cheesehead TV Draft Guide is available for pre-order now. $7. Get you a comprehensive review of this year's prospects in the NFL draft. Feel free to tweet the show, tweet me, tweet Jason. Tell me what you think about what we said, all that sort of stuff. That's my favorite part of the draft process, is getting some information and some opinions from you guys, even if we don't necessarily agree on all of them. But I've enjoyed this with you guys, and we will be back soon and talking about free agency, who the Packers might draft, some other stuff, other news as it comes about. But thank you guys, as always, for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.